Episode 238. We got a lot of news today as the offseason heats up. The Pirates have made a couple more additions to Don Kelly's coaching staff. Paul Skeens wins the Cy Young unanimous vote. The Rule 5 draft is coming. We'll walk you through that in the 40-man roster, some recent transactions. And, of course, every week we're going to hit you with some potential trade targets. And then lastly, we'll recap the end of the Arizona Fall League. You're listening to the Bucko Banter Podcast, brought to you by the Just Baseball Media Network. Cue the music.
Rockin' 101, she compliment my taste. Whiskey in my lemonade, cause I like the way it tastes. Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my time is like my money, cause I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates. Order steak by the plates, and in case after case, run my race at my pace, clear the grass of the snake.
Welcome back to another episode of Bucko Banner. And the Pirates have new coaches added to their staff. Paul Skeens is the unanimous Cy Young winner, and much, much more. We got some deadlines to talk about this week, Adam, because there's going to be some roster moves, I think, within the next 48 hours. So
there already has been. We'll get it out of the way quick. Cam Devaney, no longer a Pittsburgh Pirate. He was signed by the Hanshin Tigers in Japan. If you recall, he was acquired from the Royals in the Adam Frazier trade, debuted this year, played in 14 games. I'll always remember the Cam Devaney era.
In all seriousness, I like Cam Devaney a lot. He was really good to us. We interviewed him as soon as he was traded here from the Royals. And, you know, this makes sense for a guy like him. He's a 28-year-old prospect and who just made his debut this year. It didn't go as well as maybe we had hoped, but you know, he gets an opportunity to, like, you know, refresh in Japan, and a lot of guys come out of there better, gain their confidence back and come back and have a nice short career here in Major League Baseball. So best of luck to Cam Devaney. But yeah, that opens up, that's a big news for us, because that opens up another 40-man spot for the Pirates. There's two open right now. They're at 38. And there's seven guys they need to protect this week.
They're going to lose some valuable pieces, if you want to, like, I don't know how valuable, but this is a good problem to have, right? Like, every year you should be going into the Rule 5 with a roster crunch on the 40-man and have to make these types of difficult decisions. That means you've done a good job with your farm system, right? And there's a couple of obvious ones here. As Merlin Valdez is, they have to protect him. I mean, if the fall didn't say anything for you, the year, I think, speaks for itself. The pop and the lack of bats in the system, he gives us hope that there is something coming sooner rather than later. What we've heard is Antoine Kelly is likely to make the 40-man. This is where it gets interesting. Now, that's not official. That's just sources. Okay, so you got Valdez and Kelly. Now another spot can open because the non-tender is November 21st. The Rule 5 deadline to protect guys is the 18th. So by Tuesday, if they DFA somebody, there could be another spot that opens up. After that, everybody is unprotected. Johan Ramirez, likely DFA candidate. Evan Sisk. Who are the other ones that we were going through earlier today?
Holderman is an interesting case. Because, like, what do you do with Holderman? Do you bring him back, or do you non-tender him? I don't know if you get much for him in a trade, so that's an argument to non-tender him. Johan Ramirez, Evan Sisk, couple other guys too, but at the same time,
Jack Sawinski, Will Robertson.
Yeah, Jack Sawinski, Will Robertson. Emmanuel Valdez is a guy that's like, is he really going to stay on this 40-man roster? Along with some other guys, but I guess the case that I have to make here for the who to protect, I think Esmerlin Valdez is a shoo-in, and we've heard that Antoine Kelly is a guarantee, so that gets you to 40. That leaves you with some promising prospects here, and the one I think I'm most concerned about losing is Brandon Bidois. So my whole thing is, why hold on to a guy like Johan Ramirez right now if you could protect a guy like Brandon Bidois? The only case I can hear, and we got to November 21st non-tender deadline coming up in 5 days, So that's another deadline. But by Tuesday, you have the guys that you protect, you add to the 40 man are protected from the Rule 5 draft. The non-tenured deadline does not matter. Anyone you cut after Tuesday is not factored into that Rule 5 draft protection, right? So Brandon Bedois is a guy I would keep, but where I'm trying to think of it from another perspective, are they trying to cash in on a unreal season? Are they trying to sell high? Are they trying to maybe work out a trade in the next 48 hours? This is a classic 40-man crunch that we see the Rays run into every year. And I brought this up over text with us earlier. Like, this is as stressful as it may seem right now for us, just looking at it as podcasters and fans of the team. It's a good problem to have for an organization, especially a small market team. You want to have that 40-man crunch. You want to have that 40-man churn every year like the Rays do. And they just flip guys for other prospects. Is that what they're trying to do for Bedois? We'll see. But I personally think there's room to add Bedois to this 40-man still before Tuesday.
I think you just swap Johan.
Yeah.
For Brandon. I really like that promise. And this is a system that's filled with arms, specifically relievers, right? Wilbur Dotel, likely not going to be protected. Had an incredible year.
He's older too. He's like 23, 24 in Double A.
Right. So there's a lot of guys you can go through the list. Jack Brannigan is not going to be protected, and he's eligible for Rule 5. Anthony Solometto, who has gone through some problems over the past couple years.
Also two guys.
Really hot start.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Also two guys that I think are here because of injury concern, right? Like Jack Brannigan shows the power, speed, potential. But injuries have been a huge concern. Anthony Solometto last 2 years has seen a dip in velocity and also injury concerns. So these are guys that I think will be selected in the minor league Rule 5, not necessarily a major league Rule 5. And Solometto has barely pitched in the past 2 years. Omar Alfonso is the biggest name I think that could be intriguing in the Rule 5 draft process from the Pirates organization. This is a guy is one of the hardest hit rates in the system. Began elevating more this year, had I think a dozen homers, is generally like loved by the pitchers that he works with as a catcher. So yeah. As an offensive, a potential offensive catcher, I think he's going to be an intriguing option in the Rule 5 as well.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance you lose some names that you've become familiar with just from the Down on the Farm episodes, right? There might be a team that gives Lonnie White Jr. a chance somewhere else, right? I mean, the athleticism is definitely there. There's a lot of arms on this list, just friends of the show generally. Joshua Loeschorn is on this list. Alessandro Urcolani is on this list. Jack Brannigan, like we mentioned. Tyler Samaniego is on this list. So you're going to lose some people now. A lot of these guys are also going to be back as well. And a lot of these guys aren't close to helping the major league team. So this is a good problem to have, but you have to protect as Merlin. And then it just kind of gets very iffy on roster construction on what you do here. Do you DFA guys before Tuesday? Do you have those trades? Like you mentioned, I wouldn't mind seeing a trade just like you said, maximize on the top of where they're going to be. It doesn't get much better than what Brandon Bedois did this year. And I guess you're leveraging that with Antoine Kelly, who has potential starter opportunities, will likely be a closer or a high leverage guy, but he does start baseball games. Bedois doesn't. So I don't know, man. Like you said, we've heard Kelly and Valdez.
I also want to mention, you know, and this is no disrespect to our guy, Ryan Hartman, who we had on last week. I'm kind of surprised that he was protected before Bedois, but then I had some conversations, shot some text messages out today. Our guy, Jay Staff in Altoona, man, mentioned that Hartman was one of the most big league ready pitchers or arms that he saw come through Altoona this year.
Yeah.
So I think the Pirates obviously have a lot of confidence in him. And everything I've heard from Murph, from Jay, from everyone in the Pirates prospect circles is this guy is absolutely nasty. So I'm excited for him to get that opportunity. I'd love to see him and Bedois there together, but if you're going to capitalize on, and you don't necessarily want to roster three rookie relievers, I think you could capitalize on Bedois' big season and not let him just walk. I'd be kind of disappointed if that was the case. But just wanted to throw that out about Harbin because, you know, big fan of his. And I'm excited to see what he can do come this spring training.
What do you do with Holderman, man? Like,
that's a big question.
It's still a, like, do you continue to try and figure out what's going on, or do you just cut your ties? Because it has not been good.
Yeah.
For a while now. It's been a year and a half where he had an all-star start to the 2024 season, and then it just totally took a dive off the deep end, and he wasn't able to find it this year. And it's either phantom injuries or little things bothering him, and then he comes back and he's mentally not there. Me personally, I think it's just mental.
Yeah.
It happens to some guys, especially relievers, can drop off like that. But are we going to go into spring training with this guy as, like, where does he fit in the bullpen if he's not a seventh inning guy? He's not going to give you chunk innings in middle relief. He's just not. He has to have that slider working for him, or he's pretty much nothing. It's batting practice.
I think it's a guy that you can, I think you can afford to cut ties. I think they've shown the ability to, whether it's on the waiver wire or, you know, via trade or free agency, I think they found the ability to get relievers on the low. And I think you've got a lot of young, promising relievers coming up that I think you can afford to cut ties with Holderman at this point. I don't really see the point. It's kind of like Jack Sawinski, right? Like, I don't really see the point in continuing the roster of the guy. At this point, it's just not working out here. It may work out elsewhere, and I hope it does. But I think it makes too much sense to non-tender both of those guys.
Yeah, but then who do you have to play outfield? That's another problem
for, right? Jack. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be added via trade and free agency for sure.
Sure. Hopefully. Hopefully, you could say, yeah, the simple solution is, yeah, it's the offseason. We'll go out in free agency or make trades that are going to help our left field situation or just our right field situation or moving guys around and give us a little bit more flexibility. Right now, they just don't have that. So I wonder, just out of abundance of caution and historically speaking, where things haven't really worked out in their favor in the offseason, that they're not ready to cut ties with Jack Sawinski just from a standpoint of, hey, we don't have anyone else outside of him.
I don't know if you heard this, Adam, but they're willing to spend $30 to $40 million this offseason. So
that's after they trade Mitch Keller.
So a net of like $5 million. No,
right. Right. I mean, that's the reality of it though, right? Like, if you get Keller off the books, then yeah, you could spend $30 to $40 million over, you know, four or five players. And then it looks like you're doing a lot, but you really haven't spent anything else. I mean, not saying anything new here. It's just, that's the reality of the situation. So it's going to have to be done through trades. We say this every year. It has to be done through trades. You can't mess up these trades. That's why the Mitch Keller trade, if it happens, is so important to this organization. Because if not, Mitch Keller is very beneficial to this team.
Yeah.
What's more beneficial right now is a bat that can hit in the middle of your lineup and slug. And if that's going to, that's the return that it's going to yield, then yes. But if not, then they're going to have to get extremely creative.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been throwing around the word creative for the past year now, because we said that last offseason.
Creative, but yeah, creative.
Gotta get creative this offseason for sure. Adam, before we move on to some other topics, I just want to mention that, you know, the Rule 5 draft, for people that might not know, you have control over a guy, what, I think 4 years once you draft them. And then it prevents teams from just like hoarding all these players that may be ready to play elsewhere or you know, blocked. You know, it forces you to be strategic in your roster management. And so you have to protect them after 4 years in the organization. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but that occurs on the very last day of the winter meetings, which will be at the winter meetings in less than a month. Down in Orlando. I'm really excited for that. But that's what the deadline is for Tuesday, is your opportunity to protect guys that have been in an organization 4+ years on the 40-man roster, protect them from the Rule 5 draft. And then on the 21st, you have the non-tender deadline. So you have to tender a contract to a player that is pre-free agent years, right? Your ARB eligible or pre-ARB eligible players that you have control of. you have to tender them a contract or not. If you don't tender them a contract, they're gone, right? This is what happened with Brian De La Cruz last year. And who was the other guy that was non-tendered last year? I feel like there was
Connor Joe.
So there are some interesting non-tender candidates, and that happens on the 21st of November. So the roster is going to look different, I think, as soon as the next 48 hours. But yeah. I want to give some context there for people, listeners that might not know the nuances of the non-tender deadline and the Rule 5 draft.
My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that'll change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Roberto Clemente was a Rule 5 guy.
Yes, he was.
So here's defining the next Roberto Clemente.
Yeah, exactly.
It could be Roberto Clemente or it could be Josh Palacios. There's a wide range. Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
So let's talk about the coaching additions real quick.
Oh, before we get into coaching additions, Adam.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we could touch on this real quick. Let's talk about Paul Skeens.
Mr. Skeens. Like
we're going to talk about the coaching additions here for a little bit. But Paul Skeens was the third Pirate ever to win Cy Young on Thursday, right? Wednesday night? Thursday night? Last week?
Yeah, it was one of the nights.
Yeah.
Wednesday.
But first Pirate ever to win it unanimously. So that's big. Pretty cool night. And we had the opportunity to join the local press conference after he won Cy Young. And it was all the local media and us nitwit podcasters asking questions of Paul Skeens about being the Cy Young winner after he was on MLB Network. Pretty cool, man. Pretty, pretty cool that we were a part of that. Shout out to the Pirates for inviting us to that and having us be a part of it. But Paul Skeens is a Cy Young winner for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
That was the most I've seen him talk.
Yeah.
In his tenure as a Pirate, the answers were extremely detailed, thought out. Like, you had a really good insight on who this guy is.
Yeah.
Because as we see him on the field, he's a robot. Like, he goes through his warmups meticulously. Everything is down to a science with Paul Skeens. Like, he lives, breathes, and sleeps baseball. But you don't really get to see him talk that much behind the scenes. Like, during the season, it's tough to get guys to really open up. And you kind of got the sense of, like, this guy's at the top of the game in his second year. You could have made the argument that he was at the top of the game the minute he stepped onto a major league field. And he said it himself in the question that we asked him. Like, what else is there left to accomplish? Got the rookie of the year. He set pretty much every single record for a pitcher in the league for 2 years. He started 2 All-Star games in a row. He has an NL Cy Young unanimous vote. He was, what, 6th in MVP voting?
Yep.
Quite literally, what else is there for him to do except for win a World Series? And you could tell that that answer was genuine. Like, he truly believes what he's saying as a competitor, as a pitcher, and somebody who really, really cares about his craft. It was nice to see him in that environment, especially along with the news that came out that day, the you know, a teammate's just saying he wants to play for another team. I'm not even going to give that other team airtime on this podcast. Dare I say their name? It was just a load of BS, and it was nice to just hear him talk about what he wants to accomplish in a Pirates uniform. Whatever happens beyond that is what it is.
Yeah, I think my thoughts on the whole situation was that he sounded like a 10-year vet, man.
Yeah,
his name talk, like, it was really impressive, like how he sounds like a leader of this club and sounds like he wants more, and that is very deep rooted within him. And he's a winner, man. He wants to win every game, and he wants to win it all. He wants to be there on the very last day of the season, hoisting a trophy in Pittsburgh. You mentioned that many times. He wants to do it in Pittsburgh. So got me kind of fired up hearing him talk as much as he did and about what he talked about on some of those questions. But pretty cool, man. Pretty cool to be a part of it. And just wanted to bring that up real quick. Shout out to Paul Skenes, the 2025 NL Cy Young winner.
Yeah, and the last question that he answered, and this is a good transition going into the coaching additions, right? The last question was, what do you think about the Bill Murphy hire?
Oh, yeah.
And he mentioned there's two types of guys, players or coaches, front office, whatever it may be, that come to the Pirates. There's two different mentalities. There's the first mentality is it's a major league job. It's a position on a major league team. You could build your resume, and then eventually you hit free agency or you go elsewhere with everything that you learned in Pittsburgh, just getting that experience under your belt. You're just kind of treating it as a training ground or somewhere to like pick back up at. Or there's guy number two. There's individual number two who comes to Pittsburgh because they want to win in Pittsburgh, because they truly believe what's going on. They can buy in and they want to bring a winning culture back to Pittsburgh. And that's who Paul Skenes is. And that's who Bill Murphy said he is. He had other opportunities. This is not something where he was a failure somewhere else and needed to get back up on his feet. He's coming to Pittsburgh because of the coaching staff and because he believes that he could win here. And I like the way that they're rounding out Don Kelly's staff with the recent additions. You had Christopher Negron,
yes,
from the Mariners. Negron was a bench coach there, 39 years old, played as a utility man most of his career. With the Mariners, he spent some time as a third base coach. He was a manager in Tacoma, director of player development. Really easy guy to root for. Okay. And
I remember when he was a utility man for the Reds, the Dodgers. Like, he played around a little bit from 2012 to 2019. I wonder if there's some kind of relationship there with him and Don Kelly. But I like that, man. I like that hire. He's got managing experience and he's young.
Yeah. He's relatable and he's coached on teams and played in situations where they have been in the playoffs, right? Or they're fighting for a pennant, just this last year with the Mariners, right? And then you have Tony Beasley, who, if you're thinking that sounds familiar, it should, because he spent 18 years with the Pirates organization, most recently with the Rangers before they parted ways, won a World Series with the Rangers, right? He's going to be the third base coach, replacing Mike Rabella, who was hired under Derek Shelton's staff.
I'm not surprised by that. Sorry for laughing, but that's, I'm very unsurprising.
Beasley was the third base coach for the Pirates from 2008 to 2010, World Series with the Rangers, as I just mentioned. Another really good guy and respected name in baseball. This is what we're talking about, Scott. Getting guys with experience that are likable, that can really shape up a roster and build that type of community and chemistry within a clubhouse that is conducive to winning. And they did not have that before. And you saw a little bit of a shift with Don Kelly, but you didn't have Don Kelly's guys. So with the additions of Negron, Beasley, Murphy, you keep Tarik Brock around, who is very well respected and liked around the clubhouse. And I think, you know, I think they're going to have to add maybe one or two more along with
Comodina. These were the big jobs, though. Yeah.
Right. Right. You keep Comodina, who's done a great job with the catchers. I love what Don Kelly's done so far.
I love it, man. And then you bring in guys like, you know, we talked about the bench coach being someone with experience. I mean, last year they didn't really have, Don Kelly didn't have a bench coach once Shelton was fired. I mean, you had Gene Lamont come in out of he came out of his crypt and slept on the bed.
Poor Gene, dude.
I love Gene. But yeah, I mean, you didn't really have a bench coach, man. Usually those guys are like former managers, have experience, they're older. Christopher DeGron is not older, but he's got managing experience and he might be relatable to this young team. And then Tony Beasley does have a ton of experience, but not only does he have experience in baseball, he's experienced with the Pirates organization, spent 18 years in this organization, and was an interim manager in 2022 before they brought on Bruce Bochy to Texas, right? He finished the season as the manager for the Rangers, has been a first base, third base coach. And I know he was loved while he was here. I think he followed, what's his name? Bannister to Texas. Bannister,
yeah.
Yep. He followed Bannister to Texas. So I'm really excited about these coaching hires. I'm intrigued to see who else he brings on as some of these, he fills out some of these smaller roles, but he's done a really good job, man. They've hit it out of the park so far. I'm really excited to get to know Negron and the father of Colin Beasley, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reporter, Tony Beasley.
Yeah. The resemblance is uncanny. And then you still have Matt Haig coming back on second year. So I'm hoping what we talked about last year with the hiring of Matt Haig of being that player's coach and individualizing different swings and different approaches is more accepted and more utilized going into year two with a more rounded out staff and a little bit more experience here in Pittsburgh. But at the end of the day, that just depends on who you surround these coaches with, right?
Yeah.
If it's going to be the same roster, you're going to get the same result. So you need guys that are coachable, that these guys can actually work with. We know Bill Murphy can work with the pitching staff. So when we talk about this, it's really just position players. And, you know, can they get O'Neill Cruz right? Can they get O'Neill Cruz to play an above average center field? Can they bring in guys who might not be superstars, but are serviceable major leaguers that can contribute to a winning team? That's where the coaching comes in. And I think they're so far so good.
Absolutely. Just real quick before we move on, I'm sure we have some other things that we need to get to, but we have a Beasley and Negron on the coaching staff and in the beat reporter room. So pretty cool, man. Pretty cool. Just a random tidbit I wanted to throw out there. So anyways, Adam, let's get on to some trade targets as we close out this episode. We've been doing this every week here, especially on our Sunday episodes, been naming some trade targets. Do you have one that you want to bring up first?
Yeah, so I want to talk about a guy who potentially might be blocked or is a product of the system that he's in. They're going to spend money and constantly have a rotating door through free agency rather than developing internally. And quite frankly, a team that could benefit from starting pitching. Now, how this deal works out, it's interesting, and we can talk about that once I say the name, but Jett Williams of the New York Mets organization. He's currently in AAA, 22 years old, 5'7", 175 right-handed bat, was taken in the first round by the Mets in 2022, plays some shortstop. He can play some outfield, middle infield guy. The bat is pretty polished for a guy in AAA. I really, really like what he's done over the past couple of seasons, 425 on base percentage, in a AA, he had an 876 OPS, 8 triples, 81 runs scored. This is somebody who obviously is not going to play shortstop for the Mets. They're going to spend a lot of money in free agency. So where does he fit in with that club next year or the year after that? He's close, right? He's about ready to make his debut. And if it does happen, it's supposed to happen this year. He's kind of what the Pirates love. And a guy that could play everywhere. He's very patient. He draws a lot of walks. He's going to steal a lot of bases. Former Mississippi State commit. Like, I think he checks a lot of boxes of what the Pirates are looking for. Now, this is a top prospect in the Mets system, 45 overall in Major League Baseball. And I know Just Baseball likes him a lot, too, in terms of bat to ball, getting on base, and being a spark plug type of guy. But what's the return for a Jett Williams? Is that one piece in a Mitch Keller deal? Is that a more of a, like, hey, let's throw you a lot of younger arms for Jet Williams, I'm hesitant to have it be Mitch Keller. Just because with Mitch Keller, I want a guy that has major league experience.
No, I don't think that's Mitch Keller trade, man. I think that's more of like a Thomas Harrington or a young arm that you're willing to part with. It might even throw in a Bidois, right? To New York. And I don't even know if New York necessarily, like, they need a top of the rotation arm for sure, but they've got a lot of young arms, top prospects, McLean, Tong. You know, they've got some names there that they can lean on, but I don't think this is the Mitch Keller trade. I think this is one that you're going to have to maybe get a little creative with. Maybe it's a big league bat, or maybe it's a Tamar Johnson that you throw in for second base, or it's interesting because I don't think the Pirates would be giving up more in this situation, right? Like, I think
I'm struggling with the return here because, again, I don't want it to be like the headliner deal with Mitch Keller.
Right, right. And I love the angle that you're going here because I think looking at some of these guys, you talked up Harry Ford a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Guys that are blocked that are major league ready and have a high pedigree, ton of projection. Like, I think these are the type of guys that they should be looking at getting on the low or buying low on them if they can. And it makes a ton of sense. Like, I'd have to sit down and think about what a return would look like, but this makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. We're going to have to talk to some people in the scouting department and get like a little bit more inside information. Cause this is the stuff that I love. It's just like, where do you begin? Do you empty the farm on the lower levels and give like a lot of promising arms in that respect? Or do you sell on guys that are high? Like right now, like Brandon Bidois, Antoine Kelly, like who are those guys that you move in order to make this major league roster better right now? And does Jet Williams make a roster coming out of spring training? He doesn't in New York, but maybe he does in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think he definitely makes the case for it. The bat, the ball is there, and I think he's got a lot of tools that the Pirates like. So that's a great choice there, Adam. I'm going to go a little different route. I'm going to go the more unattainable route maybe, and maybe possibly someone that might be a pipe dream. Maybe not so much a pipe dream, but it was just reported by Jim Bowden that the Orioles are fielding calls on this specific player. I'm going to go Adley Rutschman. All right. We've been making the case to sign a veteran catcher to work with its young staff. But what if I told you could get a young catcher with a veteran type presence who's won before and he can manage a staff, who's a switch hitter, who's coming off a down year offensively, but can manage a staff and has a ton of offensive potential on both sides of the plate? That's Adley Rutschman, man. 220 this year, 307 OBP, 673 OPS. That's a bad year for Adley Rutschman. He had 9 homers, 29 RBI. Still had a 1.2 WAR due to his defense, 91 WRC plus. He's due to make 6.75 in 2026, and he becomes a free agent in 2028. So if you're all in on this year and like kind of like worried about 2027, this makes a ton of sense. And it also is more than half the price of a JT Romuto, who's 34 years old. So JT Romuto, the projections are on 15 to 16 million a year. You can get him for 6.75 for the next couple of years. Fielded calls on him. He's got an elite blend of defensive leadership, advanced hit tool, switch hitting power, and a franchise corner makeup. Can you imagine this guy at the top of your order with a Connor Griffin, a Spencer Horwitz, and throw in whatever other names you want to there. But I think I think there's a lot to dream on here, man. I think him and Paul Skeens would be a dynamic duo. It might ease Paul Skeens, you know, sadness when Henry Davis is not his everyday catcher. But he provides more offense, even with those line last year, which was a down year, would have been one of our better offensive catchers this year, which is not saying much.
Talk about a good clubhouse guy too.
Yeah.
Like, the Orioles have had a lot of good guys in that clubhouse, and they definitely did not have the year that they expected to have. And they've been a credit to them. They've been able to build from within for the most part, but it just hasn't really, I don't know if they don't have the formula right, but something's not right with Adley right now, but you know what he could potentially be. My only concern is it has just dropped off in the past couple of years. Like, it went from being very, very good to like, okay, maybe a bad, you know, sophomore year to like not good at the plate at all. And I know he was battling some injuries, but for 6.7 mil and the potential that's there at a premium position that they need, you're right. Like Henry Davis cannot be the guy if he's going to hit below the Mendoza line.
As a what would you think the package would look like for him? Because I think this is a Mitch Keller type of trade.
I think it could be a one-on-one.
If you throw in an Omar Alfonso.
Yeah, I think you could throw in an Omar Alfonso. I think you could throw in
a Bidois.
A Bidois or another lower level arm. Again, the Orioles need arms.
Yeah.
Like desperately.
Both rotation and bullpen.
They brought in Shigano from Japan, like a righty throwing 90 only does you so much, right? So Adley always is in my good graces when it comes, because he's just such a good guy and the work that he does behind the plate, and you see how hard he works. I think the bat's going to bounce back, especially from both sides, but you're adding slug when it's there. And you're not going to get it from Henry Davis. I know we forget about Rafael Flores a lot, and that's kind of to be determined on how they see him as either an everyday catcher or a platoon guy at first base. He's going to have to factor in somehow. You traded a David Bednar for him, right? So like he has to factor in there somehow, but I don't mind him being a DH or a platoon bat at first base if you could solidify the catcher position with a guy like Adley Rutschman.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I totally agree, man. With that said, let's get on real quick to wrap up, Adam. The Arizona Fall League, I'll kick us off. The season's now over for the Salt River Rafters, but we had some games this week. It started on, I'll get us through Sunday, Monday, and I'll let you close out the week. Sunday was the Fall Stars game. The NL lost 5-4, as Merlin Valdez was the only addition to that Fall Stars team. He went 1-for-3 with a walk. And then on Monday, they played the Scottsdale Scorpions. So we got to see our guy, Axel Plaz, who went 2-for-3. He finishes at 348 on the season in the Fall League. Will Taylor, 0-for-2, 1 run, 1 walk. He finished at 143. Adam, take us into the last two games of the year.
They got a W against the Sagueros on Tuesday, 5-2, as Merlin Valdez 1-for-3 with a run, hitting 368. Parachi started and earned the W, 3 2/3, 6 hits, 2 earned, 2 walks, 7 Ks, gave up a bomb. Derek Diamond got the hold, 2 1/3, 2 hits, no earned, 1 walk, 1 K. Joshua Loshorn, friend of the show, got the save, 1 inning, 1 hit, 2 walks, 2 Ks. All Pirate pitching staff in the Tuesday game. And then Axel Plaz went 1-for-2 with 1 run, 2 RBIs, a walk, and 1K, hitting 354, by the way. And then Wednesday, Salt River Rafters played the Mesa Solar Sox, lost 3-0, as Merlin Valdez went 0-for-4 with 1K.
Single elimination. Sad to see the Rafters season come to an end, but that's it on the Arizona Fall League, Adam. I don't know how many, if there's any Pirates participating in Lidom in the Dominican Winter League or any other winter leagues, but something that's very, very captivating if you're a baseball fan and want to watch baseball in the winter. Awesome, awesome viewing experience. Other than that, that's about it for today, man. We got some new coaches. We got a Cy Young. We got some deadlines coming up on roster management. And then I think we're going to see some moves here tonight. I think we're going to have a lot to talk about next Sunday. So got a big interview coming out Wednesday. But until then, let's see what the Pirates do this week.
Yeah. And a new website is going to be coming out very soon. We've seen the mock-ups of it and it looks incredible. And what can you expect from the new website? Well, we're going to have an email list. We're going to have, you can subscribe. It'll be free to subscribe. You'll get daily updates, exclusive content directly going to you that you normally wouldn't get on the shows. You'll have access to all the videos from the website, all the short form content as well. And then a new addition to the website is going to be articles written by our staff here at Bucko Banter. And we already have a couple that we are ready to publish once the site goes live. And of course, you'll be able to get your merch on there as well. Super, super pumped about that, Scott. It's only a matter of time. About, I'd say maybe at the end of this week or like early next week, I'd expect everything up and running. We've been working with our developer over the past month to get it right. We want to make sure it's done well. Right now, it's very important for you, though, to stop what you're doing, to subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you're listening and you only listen to us, we love it. Leave a 5-star review. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Go to buckobanter.com. Get all your merch. The website is still up to get merch right now, so you can do that. And then until next time, raise it.
Raise it.
Rockin' 101, she compliment my taste. Whiskey in my lemonade, cause I like the way it tastes. Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my time is like my money, cause I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates. Order steak by the plates and it-